Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Cynthia Hoag. Cynthia Hoag has published 7 collections of poetry, most recently Or Consequence, and When the Water Came, Evacuees of Hurricane Katrina, a collection of interview poems with photographs by Rebecca Ross, both in 2010. In 2000, Hoag was living in central Pennsylvania, directing Bucknell University's Stadler Center for Poetry, when she met the French economist Sylvain Gallet, who changed her life. Now Gallet and Hoag divide their time between France and Arizona, where they both teach at Arizona State University. Hi, Cynthia. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Love to be here.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. And 2 books in 2010 is kind of amazing.
Yes. Yeah. It was a coincidence. Both books were in the works for several years. And because of some delays with When the Water Came, we lost several of the interviewees, and we found them slowly. And one was getting in touch with me in 2009, right at the end of the year. So we decided to include that interviewee. And so the book was delayed and came out perfectly 2 weeks before the 5th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina.
Okay. Well, you're going to begin with something from Or Consequence.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I wanted to begin with a poem from Or Consequence because my journey with the work on Hurricane Katrina began with a quest to find an assemblage that a New Orleans artist, the New Orleans sculptor Jana Napoli, did that was installed. There was this lovely installation across the Liberty Street Bridge, and I didn't know where that was. I happened to be in New York, and I spent one morning looking for it and finding it. So this poem is called After the Flood. After the Flood. After the artist of the assemblage work entitled Floodwall, Jana Napoli, who says, Floodwall speaks of what was lost to Katrina and what remains of New Orleans. Rows and rows of houses no longer lived in. Rows and rows of streets no longer lived on. Rows and rows of drawers on the streets of our Atlantis, aerial view. In the front of 3166, street unidentified, a chain-link fence fractures the orange X spray-painted on the house, meaning checked for corpses. 7 dead stalks, 1 dying live oak, 2 spindly plants near the road with tiny ochre flowers, yellow flax, floating primrose, tall marsh marigold, opening towards sun, but not heliotrope, street view. Drawers striated by mold, peeling shelf paper, bright green and yellow and cherry red and orange, carrots, lemons, daisies, dazed days. Painted moss, laminate breaking off from being underwater, knobs missing, sides missing, owners missing. I didn't wanted to go back is hard. I didn't lost my home, not my life. Let us go then, everywhere, everywhere. Some of the drawers are solid wood, mahogany carved with fleur-de-lis, inlaid brass knobs, tarnished wreaths, metal joints bent. Some of the drawers are treated plywood of southern yellow pine with surface burning characteristics. Some of the drawers are in pieces. The pieces are speaking their broken syllables. One drawer, whitewashed, with cards of saints, Mary, Teresa, stuck to the bottom, all detail washed away but the form of women in robes with halos. One drawer empty, shadows of objects, a cigar ring, pink, a matchbook, red, a guest label with a 10-year warranty. Has it run out? One of the drawers painted fuchsia, empty but for five purple, attached, plastic figurines with smiley faces. Water's the world we lived in. Water holds us to its own time. Yea, though we lost everything but the grace of the living community of spirit.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Cynthia Hogue, reading her work. Cynthia, I know that you lived in New Orleans for a little while, and I'm curious about that experience, but also how you came to these interview poems and this project, When the Water Came, Evacuees of Hurricane Katrina, because it's a really different kind of book.
Yes, the piece I just read is quite experimental, but it's also literally descriptive of the assemblage, which was made up of drawers that the artists gathered, that people left out on the street as they were cleaning out their houses after the hurricane. Now, I lived in New Orleans for 4 years in the early 90s. It was my first teaching job. And it kind of cleaned my clock about many things. I had never seen such poverty. I had never worked with a student population that was under such stress and working so hard to get an education. It was very, very moving. I learned a lot. I probably learned more than I taught. And it stayed with me so that I would return to New Orleans to do some research periodically once I had moved to Pennsylvania. I stayed in touch with people, though more distantly, over the years. And then in 2005, when Hurricane Katrina happened and drowned the city, I really felt that I had known the city that was destroyed. I had known the culture. I had a hard-won respect for the multiculturalism that New Orleans represented that was being lost. And I wanted, in some way, to contribute to what artists were creating afterwards, but I didn't feel I had a right to write about my feelings of loss. So that's how I happened into interviewing people. First, people I knew who happened to evacuate to Arizona. And then I worked with Lutheran Social Services to locate people who would be willing to speak with me about their experience. And I began to make poems out of those interviews and to distill out of sometimes a 50-page interview the narrative arc, but also the poetry that I heard in their voices.
Okay. Can you read some of those?
I'd love to. The titles are simply the names of the people I interviewed and who they were, what job they had, kind of Studs Terkel-like. And I'm going to start with James Davidson, artist. I'm going to read excerpts only. These poems are a little bit longer in the actual books. James Davidson, artist. Months before Katrina, I started having dreams of being in floodwater over and over. They were not bad dreams, not scary, but in each dream I was chest deep in water, making my way to an exit or an entrance to higher ground. A lot of people were helping each other get together up to higher ground, so there was no fear. then I'd wake up. Our dreams are so peculiar. You're in a strange place and wonder why you're there, but you go along with it. I had that dream many times. Started in May and stopped in August. It never dawned on me my dreams were telling me something. The day we evacuated, we drove to Memphis. CNN showed people trying to get up to the I-10 overpass, and I said, I just don't believe it. I'd had so many of those dreams, and then to see that water pouring into the city and all those people stuck there. I'll say that I only used the words that the interviewee spoke during the interview, so I had to have permission to use them. So everyone in the book agreed to be in the book. And I would ask very open-ended questions. Where were you? What happened to you? And my object was to tell the story of individuals that I felt from the coverage on the news, especially, that there were stereotypes functioning that I wanted to work against by individualizing some of these people. And I also felt that these are ordinary people who were suddenly faced with a tragedy and, in many cases, losing everything. And I wanted in some way to draw attention to that. Victoria Green, mother of four. I won't change my voice a lot. I'm not a trained actress, but I will modulate differently as the voices and the races change. We, the people of New Orleans, always talked about the big one, but I had not heard of Katrina. Hurricanes come and go, but when Lake Pontchartrain broke, every one of us was screaming and hollering. If the lake was flooding the city, we knew it'd never be the same. These times you remember every kid you went to grade school with by name. You wonder where everybody was, the bum on the corner, the pickpocketers, the little man that's always on Bourbon Street painting the city. CNN was showing people on houses. This was not a strange neighborhood to me. This was my neighborhood. It's where I went to school, where I shopped for groceries at Circle Food. I got married at that church, christened my children, buried my kin. New Orleans is the cornerstone for spirituality, the stomping ground for psychic ability. You don't get on the bus and go somewhere else. It's our culture. You'd have to be a citizen of New Orleans to understand. I was here a week and my mother passed. She never had been sick. I think any of us would trade any charity we got to go back to August 15th, 2005 and warn all our family that terrible storm would take everything away from us. But we don't get those chances. We get what we get.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Cynthia Hoag, reading from her new book, When the Water Came, Evacuees of Hurricane Katrina. Yeah, I mean, the poems are really powerful, and I was surprised to learn that you used only the words of the interviewees. I imagine that must have been challenging as a poet to do that. Is that something you decided ahead of time you would only use? No. How did that happen?
No, the method was very, very inductive, very intuitive. When I did the first interview, I didn't know what I was going to do with it. I just was talking to one of the evacuees that I knew about what happened to him, James Davison, the dreamer. And I decided I would try to make a poem out of it and see what worked, see if it worked. And it was interesting. So I interviewed another evacuee that I knew, and I made a poem out of that, and it was interesting. And I found two other evacuees whom I didn't know and asked if they would let me interview them, and I tried to make poems, and they were interesting. And so I began to think of it as maybe a set of five or six poems that would be the central section of Or Consequence. But it grew beyond that, and it became a project in bearing witness, to use that term. But it's also a project in what the Mennonites call in conflict resolution, attentive listening. So I was listening to, in some cases, extremely traumatized people. I was interviewing them in 2006, 2007, 2008, and some of them were still struggling. Some of them were still deeply affected, are still deeply affected, have not quite put their lives back together, because before Katrina, they were financially so fragile. Others are doing very well in Phoenix, in their new place.
So these are evacuees who were relocated to Phoenix, where you live. Is that
yes.
correct?
Okay. Yes. So I was working full-time, and I could actually leave work and go and conduct an interview for an hour or two, mm-hmm. and spend the next month transcribing it and turning it into a poem. I looked for the cadences of the speech. It's a truism that English is often spoken in blank verse. And in many cases, I would find that there was a natural break, a pause, which would become a line break. But in some of the poems, of course, I was editing and stylizing
sure.
the language, but I didn't change the actual words.
Okay. Could you read some more poems?
I'd love to. Catherine Loomis, Professor. Storms follow a pattern once they start, but Katrina moved west, not north. Friday, I was at Sally's house watching CNN, and we said, that storm moved. On the way home, I bought all the water left at Save a Center, and when I saw the display of batteries at the front, I thought I ought to get a pack. That small decision saved my life. Sunday, the sky turned an awful orange. The whole house shook. Monday, there were 4 feet of water along Gentilly Ridge, which is high ground. Live oak leaves shredded, stuck all over like green confetti. At first, the water was clear. I had fish in the yard. Then the water turned the tea color that swamp water gets from tannins in bark. Raw sewage floated up, and benzene. The first living thing I saw was a Lakeview parrot, a sign of great good luck. Saturday, I heard 3 shots on my street. There was a pause, then 3 more, closer, then a pause, then 3 more, closer. Were they killing people with a sawed-off shotgun? I lived in Bywater. We heard guns all the time. I know things I shouldn't know. At that moment, I knew this is what it feels like to wait to die. I took my flashlight, stood at a window, and SOS'd with it. To this day, I can't believe that a Coast Guard patrol saw that light, and Dave Foreman from Apex, North Carolina, in his big, goofy helmet, jumped out of a helicopter, landed on the balcony, and said, "Everything's going to be okay now." And then we flew through the air like an apotheosis.
That's amazing. These poems are amazing, you know.
Thank you.
It's something, it seems like you couldn't have done, certainly without the interviewees. And, you know, you talked about that right to write these poems, and the voices just come through in a way that seems so authentic, because they are.
They are.
Yeah. So working with the interviewees in this way and using their words, did that address that issue of the right to write for you?
Not quite. I actually used a method that a student of mine from Bucknell years ago had used in interviewing workers in a Pepperidge Farm factory in Pennsylvania. She called it a collaborative process. So from interview to transcription to poem, I was doing. But then I would take the poem to the interviewee, and I would ask them if it felt accurate to their experience. Of course, they wouldn't remember what they said in the interview, but I would say to them, these are your words, and so I need to make sure that this reflects your experience and what you would like to say, because it's going to represent you. Mm-hmm. And they would sign off on it. In some cases, they wanted a follow-up interview, so we would do that, and mm-hmm. I would go back to the drawing board. Mm-hmm. And in one case, somebody withdrew. Mm-hmm. She felt that, I guess it was a question of copyright. She wanted the copyright to the story, which of course she had, mm-hmm. but also to the poem that I made. Mm-hmm. And I didn't quite realize we were speaking of ownership,
right.
But we were, and she withdrew.
Yeah.
And I had told each one of them beforehand in writing, and certainly the director of Lutheran Social Services, that I would honor that, mm-hmm. that at any point they could withdraw up to the final phase of the project, which was the book. And in every case except that one, they have been very moved.
We have time for some more poems.
Okay. Richard Lyons, Vietnam veteran. My sister left the day before the hurricane. Me being hard-headed, I didn't leave. I went to the French Quarter with friends for a hurricane party and got trapped. Couldn't nobody get in, couldn't nobody get out. At first, it was fun. We barbecued and partied 4 blocks from the heart of the quarter. We didn't have no water, no electricity, no gas, no nothing. The moon wasn't out. By 6 o'clock, it was pitch dark. Hold your hand up. You couldn't see it. We all ate together. We lived together. We found us a store. We broke in there and got us meat, charcoal. We sat together and prayed. I was happy. You know the 12-step program. We say a prayer, then drink. It dawns on me sometimes we have to believe with our minds. Yea, he give us strength. We utilize that strength real good. Artie Cooper, direct hit at Diamond Head, Mississippi. Monday morning, Colleen's father woke me about 8:30. Our backyard flooded right up to the patio. Then the carpet started buckling from below. I opened the bedroom door and yelled, "You girls better get your asses up because the water is coming into this house." I grabbed insurance papers, my coin purse for tips. I was a bartender at the casino. Put them in a mud bag, and we all went up to the attic and looked down. Water rose to the top of the bottom window in the living room. So we went downstairs, and my ex broke the window, and we each hopped on the sill and jumped. By 9:20, we're hanging on the gutters off the roof. My ex pulls himself up, then each of us. We did all this in about 5 minutes because the water was reaching us. We clung close to 4 hours listening to pine cones and needles from the pine trees zing by. By 2 p.m., the storm turned and pushed the sea back to the Gulf. Here is a date book that starts the day Katrina hit. This is my story. Can you believe somebody has a date book starting the first day of the rest of her life? Kid Merv's Some Jazz. Saturday before the hurricane, my girlfriend went into labor. Everybody's leaving town and we're going uptown to Touro. My son was born at 2:13 a.m. Sunday morning and I was wow. I went through years of music, Sunshine of My Life, James Brown, Bob Marley, It's a Wonderful World, some brass band, Curtis Mayfield. So they were the first songs that my son heard, though our world had crashed. Monday night, we went for a walk and could hear water everywhere. But we could not see it and did not know what was happening. People called in to the mayor on the radio asking, why is the water rising? Is the levees? Is the pumps on? The pumps are working, sir. Mayor Nagin was stalling, knowing he had a whole set of people to move out. If it had been Nebraska or Idaho, everybody would have been rescued, given thousands of dollars. This is the land of the free. Next day, ooh, lordy, it was hot. The water reached us. We had 5 minutes to evacuate.
The poetry of Cynthia Hoke, a reading from her book, When the Water Came, Evacuees of Hurricane Katrina. Thank you so much, Cynthia.
Oh, thank you, Jan.
Beautiful. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Alan Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Wednesday night at 7:30 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP.